This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 26th of April, 2021. Markets coming back quite smartly on Friday after that Thursday sell-off that seemed to be sort of inspired by the Biden announcement on plans to or hopes to implement a new capital gains tax that got headlines. Supposedly, some of the thinking is that we know something like this is coming down the pike and that the final version might be considerably watered down. I guess that's has to be the optimistic view on things anyway. So we closed back higher, the S&P 500 narrowly missing a new all-time high, and the NASDAQ 100 basically erasing the previous day's losses. We have a lot of chopping back and forth, though, and we are losing momentum, as we've pointed out. You can see on slide two of today's slide deck, we're still looking at a potential MACD crossover, although you need to see a follow through lower, perhaps below that lows last week around 13,700. And then you would also getting below the 21-day moving average, another key indicator. But it's a massive week ahead. I don't want you to launch into the full earnings preview here, Peter, which we'll definitely be talking about later. Gigantic earnings week for this earnings season. But what's your take on the market, the internals, and where we're sort of set up coming into this week?
Yeah, last week we ended, as you said, on Friday with a very strong comeback to bubble stocks and green transformation and battery stocks. It was very strong and was on that whole Biden proposal. And I think it was a big test as well for Europe. As you can see on slide three, we have been very strong momentum relative to what we have seen in some of the US indices. And we had actually a weekly low that was below the prior 2 weeks lows, but Europe pulled back. And I think here this morning we are trading a little bit mixed. We're still a little bit south of the all-time high, but I think this week is going to be interesting on the earnings front for Europe, because Europe has actually been doing better. But we'll be talking about that in a few minutes when we get to the earnings season preview. But I just want to also highlight on slide three, we are sitting here in Europe, and I sit with the quantitative things now and then. And I thought it was quite interesting that the EU apparently have been rolling out this huge regulation, potential regulation on artificial intelligence. And some of the things that they are trying to regulate, you just think, John, it's typical Euro trying to mess with small details. And if you see some of the experts within machine learning and statistics, everyone is shaking their heads at what the EU is trying here. So this is just typical EU and regulation. But in terms of equities, I think I'm still leaning towards that the momentum is attacked, but it all comes down to the earnings season. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, and just for the cycle, I tweeted out a chart last week. We looked at one of these sentiment indicators, bulls minus bears, showing a pretty remarkable extreme. And then this guy, Lance Roberts, I can't remember the outfit he's with, has a combination of indicators that included that one that was at some sort of beyond extreme bullish reading. So very interesting as we're charging into a week with these earnings reports. A lot at stake on antitrust longer term, a lot at stake with an FOMC meeting this week and earnings, et cetera. But very interesting, and not a lot of technical weakness to show for all this contrarian potential here. Just a brief turn through FX, and then I want to talk about fixed incomes, because I really think if we're looking for signals, it's going to come from the fixed income market here. first of all, a small story in EM. We have Turkey, which is struggling, the Turkish lira struggling towards those key lows. You can see on slide four in today's slide deck, 850 area in dollar try, really key here, although in a way, absolute levels are a bit irrelevant as you consider the carry situation for a country with a 19% interest rate, but still psychologically important, 8.5 level. just want to point out that although there's lots to worry about, we had this weekend announcement from the Biden administration calling the Armenian killings in the Ottoman Empire as a genocide, which has raised the ire of Turkey and evoked a strong response from them. We have there was a lot of a kerfuffle last week and sort of a back and forth on whether crypto is being entirely shut down in Turkey. A couple of Turkish crypto exchanges crashed. There might be some of that in play as well. But if you look at the credit spreads, so this is going to be more of the sort of the stable international money. It's not particularly spooked, and you can see that small inset chart there showing the credit spreads on Turkish dollar bonds. This is for a 2040 Turkish dollar-based sovereign bond. And we've actually come in from the recent widening of those highs that was inspired by the central bank shuffle when the Turkish lira really spiked lower. So a contrarian signal that suggests actually, maybe it's risk reward-wise, there's something here. It's not a currency pair I appreciate or like to consider trading, but it's just an interesting mismatch, I think, in what you're seeing in the price action versus the credit spreads. And then this is going to be a little bit difficult to talk through, but I think I want to set it up as a key conversation around U.S. yields and especially real yields. And if you look at the backdrop here, very strong risk appetite. We got new metals prices running to new highs overnight, and we'll talk with Ola about that shortly. And Aussie dollar, it has picked up a little bit, but it's not exactly breaking out higher at the moment here. And I think this chart on slide five, a Bloomberg chart with three indicators, sort of helps to see why and what's going on here. So the black line, well, first of all, the blue candlesticks is obviously Aussie dollar. And you see it's kind of flattened out since the beginning of the year, except for that brief run to the 80 level. That was supported by a nominal yield outperformance in Australia versus the US, at least for the 10 years. You can see that the black line with the stars, pretty decent coincided indicator over that period, although not so much during 2020, where even though the Aussie yields were declining relative to US yields, you can see that that red line, which is US real yields, the break evens, sorry, the US 10-year real yields were getting crushed, and that's inverted. So as those that red line goes higher, that's say US real yields going lower. And one of the reasons I think Aussie dollar is not pounding on 80 and above is that you have those US real yields still range bound, even slightly high, and the nominal yield is not sending any signal either. So the commodities rally is simply not enough at the moment, a strong enough theme to support the Aussie. And let's take it over to you, I'll say. I mean, that's that real yield situation. Yields have calmed quite a bit. Maybe we're rolling over here in the treasuries. I looked at the 10-year treasury chart today. Looks to me like we could be headed back higher. But what's your take on the treasury market this week? We've got a couple of auctions up today and tomorrow.
Yes, John, we are starting actually today with the US Treasury is issuing 5 years notes, and tomorrow they're following up with a 7-year notes. I don't think that there will be much volatility surrounding these auctions, but it will be worthwhile watching how foreign bidders are going to behave and if there is any pickup in demand. My take is that we are still in bearish territory in US Treasuries. If you go on slide six on the chart that you have on the right, that's the outflows that we have seen since, if you focus on 2021. In the first quarter, there has been a massive outflows of long-term US Treasuries because we are just seeing the TLT, which is 20 plus US Treasuries. And the outflows continue throughout the second trimester. So what I think that is happening is that the bearish sentiment is there, and the rally that we have seen in US Treasuries will soon finish, and we will see 10 years breaking above 1.6% and possibly rising to 2%. It might not be the FOMC that is going to spark such a sell-off, but more inflation expectations. And on Friday, we have personal consumption expenditures. And I think that if there is any surprise in those numbers, then we could see US Treasury resume their sell-off.
Yeah, I think this FOMC meeting is probably shaping up to be mostly a non-event. I think it's more interesting actually to look on the fiscal side. And there, I think there's some cause for concern for those looking for the massive stimulus packages coming through fast and furious. We have this $2.3 trillion proposal from the Biden administration, which the Democratic senator, and remember, you can't lose a single vote in the Senate if you're the Democrats, is out against the rolling so many different programs into the so-called infrastructure bill because there's a lot of spending on things like elderly care, et cetera. He wants to see some of that broken out. And that means that we could end up with something far smaller. The Republicans proposed something like $600 billion. And Senator Graham, a Republican, is arguing that maybe the common ground is around $800 to $900 billion. So anyway, we're far from seeing whether the next stimulus package is going to be as big as originally touted. And then just briefly,
John, I think actually it's worth mentioning as well on all these stimulus packages that the recent survey on small businesses in the U.S. showing that it's very difficult to fill positions. And there was news out this morning from Bloomberg. They were running this article that big restaurant chains like McDonald's, etc. They can't staff open positions, and they're trying to lure workers in with a higher pay, one-time bonuses, potential paying tuitions on future colleges, etc. I mean, it's really interesting what's happening in the U.S. and it's this whole clash between the labor market and the capital market. It seems like it could be a major shift what's going on in U.S. politics and economic policy.
A very key point. And of course, with the latest $1.9 trillion that was passed, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was extended through September, those benefits. So that's still a long wait. And apparently some of the anecdotal evidence is that some folks around certain income levels would prefer to simply sit on their benefits rather than find one of the lower skilled services jobs that are available. But key point, and obviously they're going to have to step up with higher wages if they want to get people back into the workplace. And then just to round out the FX story, and then one more comment on EU sovereigns. On slide 7, I have the FX board trend evolution. The strongest signal there is the negative trend in the dollar at the moment. And you can see why when you look at a chart like Eurodollar on the left there, where it's approached a key sort of final large Fibonacci retracement around 121. I've been really surprised at the degree to which this is backed up with a little backfilling on the way up, a little consolidation. But I think it's a key crossroads. I'm not sure that I understand why it's going to go straight to the highs for the cycle here without some new catalyst on U.S. real yields or otherwise. But what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously yields, if yields are going strongly higher in the U.S., I'd say we're going to be dragged, or at least to some degree higher in the EU. But how high can we go here, do you think, if yields are breaking up?
Well, it really depends on how is going to shape out the sell-off in U.S. treasuries. And I think that the mantra is that if we see U.S. treasuries going towards 2% or hitting this pivotal level, then a repricing in European sovereigns is going to be massive as well. Because at that point, if you take 10 years U.S. treasuries and you hedge them with a 3-month forward, then you would get a higher yield than what is offered out of Greece. But in slide 8, I think that it's interesting. I was thinking that it would be interesting to see what bonds are doing, because last week the ECB has been basically telling us that it won't do anything until the German election, basically, until autumn. So what can we expect from the bonds until then? And the answer is that bond yields are going to go higher. Right now, as you can see, since February until now, they've been stabilizing around the minus 0.23%. However, they are heading upwards. And if they break above minus 0.20%, then they could consolidate between this level and minus 0.15%. But the big take here is, John, that in the German elections, we are going to see a Green Party involved in the government, then there is the real chance of bonds going to 0% and above quite fast. And that's the long-term trend of bonds. So just watch out for sentiment in European sovereigns related to US treasuries until German elections, and then prepare for a quite of a sell-off after the German elections.
Yeah, the German election is such a key political milestone for Europe. All right, Ole, you're a very patient man. We've got a lot going on in the commodity space, and a remarkable action in the copper market. Dr. Copper telling us that there's a lot of demand for the stuff and tightness in the market, I suppose.
Absolutely. We are seeing basically a continuation of that breakout we saw just a couple of weeks ago. And overnight, we hit a new decade high in copper. Iron ore is not far behind, depending on whether you what price quote you're taking in. But we are around a 10-year high there as well. So it is the continued look for, or expectation that we're going to see a growth sprint. We're going to see a green transformation, which will require additional raw materials. And so basically, a market looking for some years ahead where we're going to have inelastic supply into a rising demand situation, and that's really what's carrying it higher right now. So it's adding to the general price pressures that we are seeing coming in from commodities. I haven't put in an agricultural chart today. I did that on Friday, and what we're seeing there is the year-on-year rise in the agricultural or the sector as a whole is currently now running around 70% year-on-year, primarily driven by this phenomenal grain gains we continue to see in the grain market. So price pressures most certainly coming in from the commodity space. To say two markets that are not really having much fun right now is the gold market and the oil market. Just like copper, we had a breakout a couple of weeks back. But while copper's continued higher, gold has faded somewhat here around this 1800 level. So currently stuck in the range 1760 to 1800, and oil as well broke above 65, but straight back down to that level. And that's clearly the dramatic scenes that we're seeing coming out of India right now, where the virus count is basically rising very, very fast. It's out of control. India is the third biggest consumer of fuel products in the world. So already now there are expectations that fuel demand could drop 20% during the coming weeks, and that will obviously have some kind of impact on the overall global situation. So oil is struggling a little bit for traction here, waiting for the OPEC Plus meeting on Wednesday, and I think gold market is probably also waiting for Wednesday for the FOMC meeting. So so potentially key week ahead for these two markets.
All right, and that will take us over to the earnings of this week. Really the biggest topic, I think, across markets. Peter, you've got, running out of chart space on slide 13 with the whole overview of all the companies reporting around the world today. A really big one, of course, the speculative space is Tesla, but I'll let you take it away from here.
Yeah, it is a gigantic week for earnings, and it is because I think roughly around 30% of the MSCI World Index will be reporting, and alone in the S&P 500, they will have 7 out of the 10 largest companies reporting. And it's everything from Tesla, Microsoft, Alphabet, Apple, Amazon, and the likes, Visa. It's a huge week. On slide 12, I've just flagging our preview, which we sent out last night. I'm talking about the earnings season in general, but also the trends, and then there was a very brief preview of the what I call the Big Five, so the five biggest companies in the S&P 500. And it all starts today with Tesla. So revenue is expected to be up 74% year-over-year. But actually down from the quarter before, so the end of Q of 2020, so Q4 there. And the key thing that investors will be looking at here is whether Tesla will hint of any, margin pressure from pricing pressure in China, but also increased competition in Europe, whether they will address that they are actually losing market share. And then keep in mind that these regulatory carbon credits, it earned Tesla $1.6 billion last year. They would not have been profitable last year if it hadn't been for those credits. And as Ford and General Motors are ramping up their own electric vehicle production, Tesla won't be able to earn the same degree. The CFO has said that himself. So we expect headwinds to really be, coming to Tesla this year and basically over the next 12 months. So that's and the bar has been set extremely high for Tesla. And then On Tuesday, we'll have Microsoft and Alphabet, and we expect all the technology companies to deliver pretty rock solid earnings. As you can see there, I mean, the expectation is just incredible. I mean, Microsoft revenue expected to be up 17%, earnings up 26% from a year ago. Apple expected to be up 32% on revenue and 54% year on year. I've tried to highlight in yellow the different things that I think the market will be looking at, and I think for a big company like Alphabet, the interesting potential angle here is whether Google is losing ground to advertising on Amazon's own platform. So what they call in-application advertising, and also Facebook, Pinterest, and Snap. We already saw pretty strong results from Snap last week. So things are shaping up in the online advertising industry, and potentially not for the better, at least for Google. And then, of course, also we have Amazon. You can see the entire calendar on slide 13. I've marked in red there all the most important earnings that we'll be tracking and talking about, and with different angles, whether it's logistic costs, UPS and DSV tomorrow, you know, Tesla and NIO and EV, and Ørsted on Thursday on the renewable energy side. There's also, this is important for Ole as well. So this week is huge on technology stocks, but it's also very huge on global energy stocks. And we also have Caterpillar in the construction side of things. We have a lot of pharmaceuticals. It's just basically the earnings season will get settled this week. And as you can see on slide 13 on this small insert there, the trend has been, NASDAQ has done really well. So the bar and expectations are high there. Can they continue to deliver? We'll see. And then also the MSCI World's earnings rebound has been much stronger than the S&P 500. That's really hinting at this value versus growth outperformance that we have seen over the past 4 to 5 months. So, and I bet that will continue to happen as energy and materials and industrial sectors continue to perform on all this stimulus and rising commodity prices. But John, I could talk endlessly about these earnings. I think it's much easier to just flag all these two slides, 12 and 13, and people can read up on the preview, and then we'll take them one by one, and we'll start by digesting Tesla earnings tomorrow morning when I think that they're out after the close tonight.
Yeah, and you've got Tesla, you know, technically very interesting because it's almost exactly halfway between the high, all-time high near 900 and the consolidation low below 600. It's closed around Friday around $730. Feels like it's kind of coiling to figure out what it wants to do next. Let's go to the macro calendar. It's a pretty busy week. We have the 2 and 5 year auctions today, as Althea mentioned. The 5 year more interesting there. The longer it gets, the more interesting they get. And the 7 year tomorrow. IFO out of Germany today, likely going to be very strong. Bank of Japan tonight, not much expected. Of course, they did have their policy review and decided on that capping of 10 year JGBs at 0.25%. Or 0.25%, either side of zero is the yield curve control message, meaning that the yen will remain very sensitive to moves in the yields, especially in the US. Tomorrow's Riksbank, not much expected there. And we have the FOMC meeting on Wednesday. Again, they're in a very much wait and see, wait for outcomes. And ironically, although they're in for a wait for outcomes to be realized point of view or stance before they're going to move on guidance, they are actually forecasting that inflation is going to be the big inflationary pressures that we're likely to see in the coming months will prove transitory. So in a way, they are actually not just wait and see, they actually are forecasting something. And then, as Althea mentioned, the March PCE inflation data on Friday. That is a mouthful. There's a lot going on this week. We'll try to keep you on top of things for the rest of the week with the coming Saxo Market Call podcast. For today, thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.